As a general practice, most people keep their personal experiences outside of the workplace. But how do you lead at work when your personal pursuits become public? Or in the case of this episode's guests, make major headlines?
We all have experiences in society where we can learn and become the men and women that lead companies after. And we have to draw from those moments of compassion, difficulty, what we learn from those moments, and apply them in our regular jobs.
That's Juan Carlos Cruz, a prominent advocate against sex abuse in the Roman Catholic Church. Through his 2014 book, The End of Innocence, and numerous appearances, Juan Carlos has shared his story of abuse by a priest in his native Chile. He also co-founded a survivor support organization that helps survivors and their families worldwide. Juan Carlos's experience and advocacy have helped many of the faithful, including Pope Francis, recognize the harm of abuse. In March 2021, Pope Francis appointed Juan Carlos to the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors, which is a Vatican-based institution that aims to protect children from pedophiles. Professionally, Juan Carlos is the Vice President of Global Communications and Public Affairs at Livent, a global lithium technology company. Before joining Livent, he held several executive communication positions, including the head of global communications and brand for the agricultural division of DuPont and head of communication for Manpower Group. He also served as the vice president and head of public relations and media at Banco Popular and led the Banco Popular Foundation. For almost a decade, he was a corporate public relations manager for United Airlines. He began his career as a journalist in Santiago, Chile, and is the recipient of the 2015 Ellis Island Medal of Honor for humanitarian work around the world.
I always tell people, try to speak up because you deserve to live a happy life, to be a successful, happy professional. You deserve to be happy and successful in your family. You deserve to be happy with the partner you have.
I'm Merrill MacDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and to gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. And now, Juan Carlos Cruz. We caught up with him on his way to Rome to visit the Pope. So, Juan Carlos, I am so excited to have you here on Let Go and Lead. We've been friends for, I was realizing, almost 20 years.
I know. A long time, Merrill. And every time it gets better.
And I'm just so excited about all the things you've been doing and really sharing it with our audience. And first, I, you know, just love to start with, for me, what was incredible news that Pope Francis recently appointed you to a commission tasked with protecting children from child abuse in the church. How did it feel to have that honor?
Yeah, well, first of all, Merrill, I never, and you know me, I never thought I'd be friends with a pope. So, you know, when I met him in 2018, after our case, you know, was very well investigated after 10 years, finally. And so through the years, I visit Pope Francis often and stuff. And in February, he called me to tell me that he wanted to appoint me to this commission. And I said, wow, what an honor. I was amazed and very honored and happy.
First of all, what is the role of the commission?
The role is basically you're an advisor to Pope Francis, and it's like 15 people under one cardinal, with Cardinal O'Malley from Boston, and he leads the commission in Rome. And we meet twice or three times a year, and there's different committees inside the commission. I have a lot of hope. I mean, I think there's some things that need to be changed.
As you talk about having hope, I'm thinking back to several years ago when you wrote a book about your experience of sexual abuse. Back then, you had some doubts about the church and about perhaps even the Pope. What happened that changed that?
You know, for years, as is the story for many victims and survivors, men, women who have been abused, not only in the church, but everywhere, when a survivor finally decides to speak up, stories are normally met with you're a liar, you want something, you want money, where's your lawyer, you name it. So, you know, I spoke up with these two friends 10 years ago. And yes, you know, our story was heard and it made a lot of noise. So we had a lot of visibility and et cetera. So it became sort of an emblematic case. But they tried to fix it, you know, quickly. And, you know, as it normally happens, these cases are not just like, oh, fix it and that's it, let's move on. There's a lot of issues and situations and things that you have to consider, et cetera, et cetera. So the church had not behaved well. They had told Pope Francis all the wrong information. And so I didn't trust that the church would do anything. But eventually, Pope Francis went to Chile in January of 2018. Very few people went out to cheer him and meet him. And it was painfully incredible to see that. And so he went back to Rome and sent an investigator who came to interview me. So when these two investigators went to Chile, more than 100 people went to testify. And so they elaborated this incredibly detailed document that they gave to Pope Francis. And for the first time, a pope sent a letter out saying, I have committed a grave mistake and I want them to come here and I want to apologize personally. And so that's when I went to the Vatican. And ever since, we've been in touch regularly.
And how did that feel? I just can't even imagine getting on the plane and thinking, I'm going to meet the Pope.
I felt incredibly honored because not many survivors get the opportunity of doing something like this, of course. So I felt like an incredible responsibility that my story is the story of so many men and women that have suffered this, not only in the church, but in their families or in society, etc. It's such a terrible crime. And you know, it ruins people's lives and some people just can't get over it. And so many people I know have committed suicide. So for me, it was terribly important. And we spent 3.5 hours speaking. And then I spent another hour with him. And then he told me, let's be in touch. And I thought, you know, how kind of him. I never thought I'd see him again. And it became into meeting every 2 months. I would go to Rome and spend an afternoon with him. And then a few months later, he started calling me on the phone.
Has it ever gotten to a point where it shifted from, oh, this is the Pope, to just my BFF is calling?
Yeah, it's so funny because I think popes in general, I guess, there's so much bureaucracy and ways of speaking. And I speak to him with utmost respect, of course, but at the same time, I speak to him like I'm talking to you. And I think he appreciates that because I don't, you know, in the Curia, normally they tell him what he wants to hear, you know, or things like that. And I'm so honored to be his friend and at the same time be able to maybe help so many survivors around the world. But if I can bring a little joy to so many people who have had such a hard time by helping them tell their stories, for the church to understand how to hear them, to be compassionate. It feels weird telling the church how to be compassionate, but that's really important. And believing people from the offset, it is important to me.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how and why you made the decision to come forward.
Well, you know, as you probably know, men, women who have been victims of sexual abuse or rape, women being raped, and it's very hard to come forward. And, you know, it's incredible what it does to your life, how much it defines you, and how much you change when you speak out, the liberation you feel. And so I felt that it needed to be done, first of all, because it was still happening to others. I felt with the support of these two other friends, and I felt that we had to do it. So this is where I think our skills, I think, Meryl, and so much you have taught me as well through the years, it's been my communication skills, for example, helped a lot in how to tell my story, in how to get to the right media, in how to do all these things. So it was the right time.
Yeah, 10 years ago, and you began sharing your story. And what happened early on?
Well, nobody believed us, right? I mean, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and media around the world, yes, they believed us. But, you know, nobody believed us in terms of judges and et cetera. But slowly and surely, and we kept insisting, we kept talking, we kept going forward and saying what we needed to say and all over the world. But I also think that trusting and being completely honest and not tripping yourself in your story, because you're always telling the truth. So you're not worried about telling your story. And so it was scary, but, you know, at the end, when we managed to go and talk to him, and now how I see myself now and what I am doing for others, all the difficult times, and trust me, they were incredibly difficult, because also I had to work and be someone, you know, that makes other people the story. I'm not the story. I make other people the story in a good way. And so it was just so awkward for me. But you know what? I would do it a million times, because the satisfaction of the person I am today and helping others, I don't have words to describe it. I became sort of this activist that, Meryl, you met me 20 years ago. I am not the Juan Carlos you met. The man I am today is completely different to what I thought I would be. But I'm happy, right? Because it's been incredible.
You know, thinking back, I remember too, as you were struggling with the fact that you were such a devout Catholic and a gay man in the Catholic Church, which is, of course, a machine. And just the whole dread of going up against something so powerful, and yet you kept going.
Yeah. So you've seen sort of my evolution and what I've become. And, you know, I was so damaged by, you know, I consider myself a regular Catholic. I'm not any saint or anything, but I'm a gay man. And, you know, that's all things that trigger, you know, the more devout ones. And so, you know, I was abused when I was a kid. And when I told my story 10 years ago, the cardinal in Chile said, oh, I don't know if Juan Carlos Cruz is a victim, because, you know, when he was 14, he might have liked it. I mean, that was, to me, it broke me, but at the same time, it made me so much stronger. I've always had jobs, luckily, that have been incredibly supportive in these 10 years, and that's a message we should give companies. So I've been able to fight it, and I don't know how I had this strength, but I did it.
Well, I remember, too, you know, when you were at DuPont, then CEO Ellen Cullman was so supportive of everything you were doing. And I have to imagine that that meant a lot to you.
Yeah, she was wonderful. And then when I came to Livent, where I'm currently, I cannot tell you and I cannot express how incredibly supportive and wonderful these people are. I mean, I've never felt singled out or come on, stop it, you know, because I focus on my work and I love what I do and I am passionate about my job, but I'm also very passionate about this other thing. And so the support is immense.
Well, and you have to give a lot of credit to Livent too, because of course, at that point, they already knew that you were in the middle of all of this, right?
Yeah.
So it's not only just from a standpoint of diversity or inclusion, it's also hiring an executive who has almost another full-time job.
Exactly. And credit goes to Paul and the chairman of the board, Pierre Brondeau. They have been so supportive. And to me, those are the companies I want to work for. And companies who do that with an employee, with a leader, with an executive, with a manager, with a specialist, who are supportive of who those people are, and you can bring your whole self to work and, you know, be judged on the merits of what you accomplish and the results you accomplish, and also be proud of what you do on the outside of work, if you will. Those are the companies that should be in the best place to work list, honestly.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because you talk about not being the same person that I knew 20 years ago and how much just you've transformed. And I think about the whole concept of finding a purpose, like 20 years ago, we wouldn't have been thinking this would be your purpose in life. And yet here you are. How has that actually impacted your thinking about your professional role?
It's just made me better, I think, because I have very clear lanes in my life. And sometimes they're not that clear, so I don't have anything resolved. But the fact that you might think you know your purpose when you are 20-something, trust me, that can change in your 40s completely. And it is incredible to see yourself look behind or look at who you were. And now I sometimes have to pinch myself and I'm like, who would have told me that this would be me at this time, at this place, at this age, at this professional time in my career? I don't know. It's just been really interesting, I have to tell you.
You know, and as you're talking about this, a lot of people may be thinking that you're talking about the celebrity, but just knowing you, I know what you're talking about is facing your fear.
Yeah. If I wanted to be a celebrity, I wish I could have been like an amazing, I don't know, actor or sing or something like that. Oh, that I would have loved to be famous for that. I am famous for something else, which is not so glamorous. But you know what? That purpose, that sense of purpose that you are trying to be good at what you do professionally, but also complemented with trying to be a good person in the world you live in the communities you live in society, and aspiring to help in some way, to me, that makes you a more rounded, compassionate person that empathizes with others, and you become a better leader because of that, I feel.
So let's talk about the concept of being a symbol, because you clearly have become a symbol to others. One of the things I think is so interesting in your story, and I remember the day that Wolf Blitzer broke the news that the Pope told you it's okay to be gay and that he supports you. I find it fascinating that he shared that with you and you shared it publicly, and he continues to stand by you, because I take from that that he said that to you in full transparency and honesty and was okay with you repeating it.
Yeah. And what was pretty amazing was that, you know, even though in theology and all that, I don't think we're going to see this opening of the church to what should be open a long time ago, the role of women in the church, the LGBT community, and so many other things, right? That should be a lot more advanced than it currently is. But he normally, an army of spokespeople would come out and correct the record that he said that. So he never contradicted me, never. And trust me, he was pressured a lot to come out and say something. And so as a leader, for example, a person who identifies with everybody, the marginalized, the poor, the rich, the homeless, the sad, the happy, you know, what an inspiration to the world in a time where, frankly, I mean, we need so much of that in our country, in the U.S., and then the world, and then this pandemic, and, you know, where truly you've seen leadership and, you know, come out from people that you didn't expect, and the problems with mental health and people coming out of their shells to tell their stories and to seek help, and companies caring more about mental health and diversity. I just feel incredible without wanting a monument or anything. I'm just me and all that, but I just feel great to be part of it. It just makes me feel so fulfilled, and someone might differ, but I consider myself a much better person, even though this probably should have destroyed me.
Just letting that sit for a minute. It's incredible. What do you feel now going forward you'll be a symbol of?
Being famous is so weird and awkward to me, but at the same time, I feel like if I am someone who people believe or people follow or people think I've done something worthwhile, and it helps them live a better life and be a better person. I really have started to believe in these years that, and it's such a cliche, right? But life is really short, and nobody deserves to lead a miserable life because others have ruined it for them in any way. But I believe that things have changed so much that people who have suffered what I did or what a lot of other people have, and sometimes a lot worse than what I went through. I always tell survivors when I speak to them, no matter what we're talking about, but I try to fit it in there. If you're listening to me, you can be happy. And times have changed. And in general, many people will lend you a hand right now. And this crime has become a lot more with the Me Too movement, with all these movements. People are going to lend you a hand. And the odds of being believed are much, much bigger. And so I always tell people who are listening to me, try to speak up, because you deserve to live a happy life, to be a successful, happy professional. You deserve to be happy and successful in your family. You deserve to be happy with the partner you have. I mean, you name it. It sounds easier said than done. But I still think, at least for me and hopefully for others, there's a way you can let it out, because you really deserve to live a fulfilled life and not let this ruin you.
And you and your friends started a whole community. You started a foundation, really, to pull a community together to help one another and support each other in a variety of ways. How do you really stay rooted in that community?
So we created this foundation with my two friends, and it's been incredibly successful. I participate in the meetings, the board meetings, etc. But also, it's important to me to try and make a space to be present, because I truly believe in that foundation. It's called Foundation for Trust, right? Because trust is something that you can break so easily, or have this kind of trust that it's misunderstood, because sometimes people think that trust is following someone blindly, you know, like, okay, you say that, I follow you, and, you know, I trust you. And no, you have to be, you have to have a trust that it's smart. It's so important for me to be rooted in that, and to teach others and to help others around the world to liberate themselves.
You know, it's interesting in talking about trust. A lot of corporations are struggling with how to really engender trust among their employees. What have you learned about all of this that would apply to a corporate setting?
So in the beginning, you know, Meryl, because I was head of global brand and all that, but as corny maybe as it sounds, if a corporation does not have a heart, it shows that it doesn't really care. And anything you try to do, and any communication a CEO sends, or someone in the corporation, or managers working on you know, talent and succession planning and all those things, if you don't have a heart, it just feels empty and cold and insincere. And so I've been lucky to work at places where it's really important that employees matter. And this phrase, you know, our employees are our biggest asset, or things that, it just doesn't ring true. And at the same time, you don't have to make such an effort. I always tell people, you know, people that it might not come natural, and you have to make a little effort. It's not that. But when you just go out of your way and it sounds so like you don't believe it, it's going to show. So no matter what you write as an employee communication, so I believe that in terms of companies being part of the communities where they live, work, operate, where employees, that shows, you know, an important part of it. I'm in charge of community relations also, and I have to go around the world, and our largest assets are in Argentina, in the Andes Mountains, really quite lost at 4,500 meters, the lithium mines. And there's a few indigenous people that live there. And so for me, it was really important to say, if the company does well, you are also going to do well. because it's our duty and it's what we have to do. And it's not just to put a check mark on your sustainability or community relations goals. It's because you believe it. A company that does good things for communities and places where they operate, live, where they employ their employees live and work, you know, those companies are the ones that do well in terms of profits, revenue, reputation, and all that. So, you know, the time for empty words and nice words are gone in companies. I think the world is awake now, and they realize that empty words don't do anything, but people that mean it and people that have a heart, that works. And for us that live in this job as communicators and executives in communications and public affairs or sustainability and community relations, like, that's my responsibility. I'm incredibly passionate about it because my own experience has made me passionate about that. And not everybody has lived what I've lived, but everybody has an experience in the world. Everybody has had a hard time in their life or their family or something. And we all have experiences in society where we can learn and become the men and women that lead companies after. And we have to draw from those moments of compassion, difficulty, what we learn from those moments and apply them in our regular jobs. And it just makes you a lot more integrated, recognize your weaknesses, enjoy your strengths, work on how you can become better. And that shows. And when people see you, it's like, that person really means what they say. And I think that's really important.
You know, I love your advice of drawing from aspects of your own life and difficult times that you've gone through to have compassion for others. And I'm wondering, just thinking about so many leaders are struggling right now with how to really increase trust in their businesses. What else might you recommend to them?
The first thing I would say is look after your people. For many years, you would have to be, if you were an executive, you had to check these boxes. If you were a manager, you had to check these other ones. If you were whatever. Sometimes you have to try and put yourself in the shoes of others, right? You know, I know it's not easy and all that, but sometimes I say, what is this person going through in his or her own life? But there's ways of being empathetic and being compassionate and also teaching and also being a leader where you don't have to go into someone's personal life, right? But I think it's really important to care and to care in a sincere way, not in this, you are my biggest asset.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things COVID has definitely taught people. That's for sure. One of the good things that came out of a bad thing, right?
Correct. And many other things. I mean, I never thought that I could work from home. Well, it took a pandemic to make you realize that you can be productive. So many people that have spent more time with their families that don't have to commute. And so employers and leaders should know that you have to be flexible. You have to understand that the world is changing and that the world has changed and that we have changed. And who would have thought that I would be writing a letter about racism, talking about what we were all experiencing locked up or not in our country and having to take a position or at least show empathy and compassion and share it with your employees or talk about mental health and direct your HR departments to strengthen whatever, you know, benefit you have regarding mental health of your employees. We weren't like that before, but that is here to stay. And so either you change or employees will be looking for companies that really care.
No, I agree. We've seen an incredible shift, one that, frankly, I've been waiting 35 years for.
Yeah.
So it's great. Well, let me ask you, you know, one closing question, which is that obviously our program here is called Let Go and Lead. And I'm wondering, what is it you think leaders most need to let go of?
I think leaders need to let go of their egos. so many times ego comes from a place of insecurity and to try and cover what you perceive as a weakness or something like that, or you think someone is perceiving as a weakness, and you, it looks really terrible. And I think leaders have to let go of pride in the sense of arrogance. You're no better than others. And, you know, working together and showing leadership is not being arrogant, being better than anybody. You are a leader and you need to work on leading, work on so many different skills, but at the same time, serve in a way, be ready to roll up your sleeves with your employees and walk around and say hello and interest yourself for people. And that's not easy for so many people, because there's introverts that are loving the pandemic and being inside and all that. But if you are a leader, yes, we respect and we love your being an introvert. But even leaders who don't have technically the responsibility to be with people all the time need to make an effort, because again, that's the only way that I think you are perceived as a good leader working for a good company, and people will want to hang out in that company, be proud of what their company is, and follow those great behaviors that are so important and that before maybe we didn't consider. I hate it when people call it the soft skills, because it's sort of pejorative, right? These soft skills are not the most important ones. Well, actually, they are very important, and so important that if you don't have them, you won't have employees working for you.
So as time's gone by, obviously your reputation and people's recognition of you has grown exponentially. And I'm wondering, as you increase your Twitter followers and just everybody else who's been following you in the media, how do you stay connected to them and pull them into the movement?
Well, I never thought I'd have thousands of followers on Twitter, that someone would be interested in what I had to say or in social media. And it's incredible. And so I don't feel a responsibility to be delivering content all the time about me or what I do on Twitter or anywhere. But at the same time, it's been a very useful tool to advance this movement, like you said. And so I try to put out interesting things, communicate important things, express a point of view, talk to others, and, you know, use those platforms that I'm provided to spread the movement.
Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much, Juan Carlos, for giving us the time.
Thank you, Meryl. Thank you. As much as you say that you've seen me grow as a person in these 20 years, I've also seen you grow as a wonderful person and professional, but also your company. So thank you to Gagan McDonald as well, and to you, and you have a big fan here. So thank you very much.
Well, and you have many fans here. Thank you.
Thanks.
Juan Carlos's dual role as a prominent anti-abuse advocate and a corporate executive gives new meaning to bringing your whole self to work. Let's recap a few key learnings. First, when pursuing your purpose, you never know who'll join you on that journey, nor how you'll be transformed. Juan Carlos started by speaking out with two friends from Chile. Now, in addition to amassing a growing community of survivors and families, he has a friendship with the Pope that has brought new opportunities for him to serve on an even larger scale. And your purpose may change over the years, and that's okay. The work you put into it can ultimately lead to your happiness and impact the most vulnerable as well as the most powerful among us. Second, always ground yourself in truth, because when you speak up in controversial situations, you can expect to face accusations and attempts to discredit you. However, when you tell the truth, you won't trip up no matter what challenges may come your way. Third, difficult life experiences make us more compassionate, which in turn makes us better leaders. When we apply to our job lessons from our toughest situations in life, we bring empathy, and that can truly imbue heart into our actions and messages. And when we have heart, we resonate more credibly with others. Companies, too, should strive to communicate with heart, starting with using empathetic language. Lastly, when employees pursue personal goals that matter in their lives, it's an opportunity for their companies and leaders to show support. After all, by embracing people who bring their whole selves to work, companies can show pride in the caliber of their employees and demonstrate their commitment to social change. What an honor to share the story of my dear friend, Juan Carlos Cruz. And for our audience, thank you for listening to Let Go and Lead.